Good Thursday to you, and welcome to Perspectives on WFSU-FM. I'm Tom Flanagan. Thanks so much for being at the other end of the radio waves, the telephone line, the email machine, the Twitter account, the Facebook page, the Instagram pics, and all the other ways we have of connecting with one another nowadays. I feel so close to everyone, which is almost unavoidable the way things are today. I'll tell you one thing that has really been fascinating, I think, about our wonderful capital region is the number of resources that are available that perhaps are not available to folks in some other less metropolitan areas, if you will, not taking away from any of the outlying rural areas. But when you get a certain kind of collective mass of people and organizations and all of that, many things become available that normally you may not be able to find in other places. And this morning's Perspectives is certainly going to be able to exemplify that in pretty stunning fashion, because coming up next week in Florida's capital city is a developmental screening that is available free of charge to parents of children who, just as a precaution perhaps, just bring them by and have them checked out. It's kind of like what we sometimes do with our motor vehicles. You take them to a tech that you trust and say, I really am not feeling anything that seems to be amiss, but I want to be sure. Could you just check all the major systems and make sure that it's running the way it should and that we have nothing to worry about in advance? Preventive maintenance, that's kind of called, and we can do the same thing with our kids. So we have an all-star panel to talk about not just the screening that is upcoming, but also the entire subject of childhood development in general and even in specific. And if you want to get involved in the conversation, of course, 414-1234, the local number. If it's long distance from you to us, 800-926-8809. Email perspectives@wfsu.org, or you can send us a tweet at WFSU. You perspective. So let's meet the gang if we can. Going from my right to your left on the radio, we say hello to Sarah McElhaney, Department of Behavioral Sciences and Social Medicine at the FSU College of Medicine. Sarah, so good to see you.
Good morning. It's great to see you too. Thanks for having us.
All right. And let's see. Let's say hi to Dr. Mary Beth C., who is over here on my left, Tallahassee pediatrician, a 30-year veteran of Children's Medical Services. And thank you, Doctor.
Good morning, Tom.
It is wonderful to see you, and thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to have tons of fun today, I can tell. Katie McCrae joins us, too, chair of the Developmental Screening Committee, without whom all this would not have been possible. And, Katie, thank you for coming in.
Oh, thank you for having me, Tom. I'm happy to be here and excited to get the word out.
A lot of this under the auspices of an old and dear friend, Courtney Atkins, executive director of Whole Child Leon, who didn't have to make a road trip today. She came right in person to join us. And good to see you again, Courtney.
Good to see you, Tom. Thank you.
Well, let's talk just about the screening in general, since this is kind of under the auspices here of Whole Child. How long has this been going on?
We started screening in the screening days in 2009. And it's one of our signature events or initiatives, if you will. We're most proud of this initiative because it's a community. We have more than 25 partner agencies that are committed to this, that, you know, dedicate and volunteer their time to come together twice a year and host these screenings. And, you know, to put these screenings on, it's a year long. We meet monthly and we're always analyzing how can we do better, how can we streamline things, how can we track, you know, the children we're screening. But this kind of collaboration, if you will, is really embodies the whole child mission and vision and philosophy of, you know, an entire community coming together to ensure that our children get off to the best start.
It is just, again, astonishing to me because you're dealing with a level of resource intensity, a critical mass, whatever you want to call it, that would just not be all in the same place at the same time under any other circumstance I can think of.
Absolutely. And some of this equipment, the vision and the auditory, I mean, it's big equipment that has to be schlepped around. And, you know, it's a big deal. And with this, to put the screening on, we have more than 100 volunteers that participate, and it's just a beautiful thing.
How many kids and parents usually show up for one of these things?
Well, we have to cap it at, I think the max is about 50 children. Since 2009, we've screened more than 750, which to the listener out there, that might not sound like a whole lot, but this is a very comprehensive screening. It takes from an hour and a half to 2 hours sometimes for each child to go through all the stations and meet with the agencies at the end. So we can cap it at about 50 per screening.
Wow. Katie McCraig, talk about the who is kind of prime candidate for this sort of thing. It's just, you know, oh, I'm worried about the kids, or again, the preventive thing that I don't think there's a problem, but let's be sure.
Well, we're targeting children 6 months to 5 years old, not in kindergarten. So we're looking at our youngest children, and we really want the parent of a child that just is curious about how their child's doing to give us a call and make an appointment. It's really never too young. Or if they're saying, well, should they be saying their sounds better, or should I be able to understand them better? If they have a question at all about what they're doing, this would be an excellent opportunity to come to the screen and just get those questions answered.
And well, Dr. C, I know there's a lot of helicopter parents out there, and you know, every time you know a child has a hangnail, you think, oh my God, you know, it's a trip to the ER may be indicated here. But still, there are certain things that parents need to be on the lookout for that you think, oh well, maybe possibly let's have this checked out, right?
Yes. I think any time a parent feels that something might not be developing as on the timetable that they expect it to, or in comparison to other children of approximately the same age, or even the timeline that the older siblings may have followed, rather than just take the, well, let's just wait and see attitude, it's always better to have it checked out, because if there is no problem, they can be reassured and they can wait and let it develop as it is programmed to do. If there is a red flag raised, then that can be further investigated. And if that child is thought to be able to be benefited by any kind of intervention services, then that's the time to get them started. The earlier, the better, both in terms of long-term outcome and also current functional status.
And sometimes you can't even, it just seems like, oh, this is so minor, it's not even worth thinking about. A very astute teacher of my granddaughter noticed she was having trouble focusing on they don't use blackboards anymore, but, you know, the screen at the front, and had, she just thought, vision problem. There was something intuitive in this woman that she said, I think there's something here. And luckily got to the child's parents, who took her in for a comprehensive eye exam. And at the age of 7, she has severe glaucoma.
Mm-hmm.
And they were able to intervene, as she's on drop therapy now. Eyeball pressure's going down, save the optic nerve. But if that teacher had not been in a position to say, I think there's something weird here, the girl may be blind now.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Sarah McElhaney, this kind of thing that, you know, happens a lot, doesn't it?
Oh, gosh. That's how I ended up with glasses in the fourth grade. Yeah. No, I think that that's one of the wonderful things about what we're doing is being able to catch things early and get a child funneled into services to kind of help mitigate what could perhaps become a problem later.
Yeah, and there's another component on this as well, and it's not just the children who are being screened, but we got to think, you know, in kind of more holistic and larger terms, right? So there are resources available for parents, caregivers, all that are part of this too, right?
Absolutely, and that's the part that we bring as the College of Medicine. We, my group, does all of our work in maternal mental health, and so one of our big pushes is that a child can be better cared for if mama's okay too, or if the caregiver of the child is doing okay, then they can give the better care for the child. And so one of the things that we were lucky to get everybody else kind of on board with that, so that we can expand our idea of what best care for a child is, to look at the system and look at the family. So we do include maternal mental health screening. Well, I guess in this case it's a caregiver, because it's not always mom that brings the child. And it's not always mom that gives the most care to the child. So we have a caregiver mental health screening. And then partnering with us on that is 2-on-1 Big Bend, who they kind of address the screening results. But then they also talk to the family before the family leaves and says, what other services do you need? Are you doing okay with child care, or do you need help with your utility bills? Because they are connected to the community in a way that they can give really great referrals and connect families with those other resources that they may need.
Boy, that's a wonderful shout out. A lady that worked with my wife, as a matter of fact, was having some fiscal difficulties related to some childhood medical expenses, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't know, it just popped in my head. Oh, yeah, you got to call Randy and the guys at 211 Big Ben, which she did. She got some emergency funding. It's a remarkable thing. And we forget about that a lot. Courtney Atkins, again, talk about the where, when, how. We didn't get a chance to really get into the nuts and bolts in case folks are just tuning in now and say, well, what are these folks going on about, the upcoming developmental screening that takes place next week?
Next week, next Friday, April 8th, the screening runs from 8:30 in the morning to about 1:30 when the last child is screened. We do ask that parents make an appointment so that we know who to expect and get a little information before the actual screening day. But it's at Children's Medical Services, which is on the corner of Miccosukee and Phillips Road.
Right next door to where the old Sunland used to be,
gosh,
as I
Tom,
remember.
Oh, you're aging yourself.
So if those folks in that apartment complex knew what used to be on that property many, many years ago, the famous haunted Sunland Sanitarium that was – yeah, that was weird. There were a lot of websites out about that. Sarah, did you ever see those?
You know, I am from Tallahassee, and so I would go and drive by. And check it out.
You
and
never
be,
snuck in?
And be, oh, no. I was too creeped out. Way too creeped out. I knew people that snuck in, but that was not my jam.
Yeah, but that is where the old, for you old-time Tallahasseans, where the old Sunland Center used to be, next door to it there. And the Children's Medical Services there at the corner of Miccosukee and what is that street?
Phillips.
There we go. All
and
right.
there is a phone number for them to call, which is Fiddler's Child Fine, that they're calling to make that appointment. And that phone number is, do you have it over there?
Let me see if I have it here. We'll give it to people on the other side of the break, which is rapidly bearing down upon us, and that'll give us a chance to reconfigure as well as we talk about the upcoming children's developmental screening, April 8th at Children's Medical Services. That is Miccosukee and Phillips Road, a week from tomorrow, and we'll be right back with you on Perspectives. For Perspectives, the local number, it's 800-926-8809. If long distance from you to us, perspectives at WFSU.org, or tweet us at WFSU Perspective. Here with Courtney Atkins, Executive Director of Whole Child Leon, Katie McRae, Chair of the Developmental Screening Committee, for the event that is coming up a week from tomorrow at Children's Medical Services, Dr. Mary Beth C., and Sarah McElhaney also here with us as we talk about the need, again, for parents. If you are just joining us now, to bring the kids after you make the appointment, and we'll tell you how to do that. Exactly how do we do that, Katie?
You call Fiddler's Child Fine, and the number is 850-561-6545 or 850-561-6553.
Okay.
So, and then there will be someone that can answer the phone, and they'll ask a few questions that Courtney talked about, and they'll get them an appointment.
Okay, and since there is limited availability of slots for a said screening, you might want to do that just as quick as you possibly can. Let's talk a little bit about maybe some success stories that have come out of previous screenings. Anyone have a really good tale of where this intervention could have, if not just been helpful, but perhaps even potentially life-saving?
Well, I can think of a couple. One is every screening, we always find kids that are on the autism spectrum that were not suspected of being there by perhaps parents or caregivers. And it's so important to identify those kids early on and get them the services that they need so that hopefully by the time they enter the educational system, they won't be in need of quite as many specialized services. They won't be as far behind. They'll have some of the skills, particularly the language skills, to be able to function appropriately and to fit in and learn in the classroom. Other examples, we were talking earlier about a young boy that was brought in by his caregiver, and he was, as I recall, close to five, so he was among one of the older ones that we see. And his story was interesting in that he had been to a private pediatrician and had talked to – the grandmother had talked about some of the symptoms, which were – really, the child losing function, losing motor function. He'd been able to walk. Now he was stumbling. Now he was not able to walk without support. And the pediatrician had recognized that that was an issue that needed to be investigated and had made arrangements to send the child for some evaluation. But as so often happens in our complex medical world, for whatever the reasons, the child fell through the cracks and didn't get hooked up with the right people to do the evaluation, and the guardians and caregivers really didn't know where to turn, and so they wound up at developmental screening. And when we heard the story and we took a look at the child and we realized this was a major neurological issue, and a few phone calls later, we had a pediatrician see this child, admit the child to hospital for the beginning of an evaluation, and then he was sent on to a more specialized evaluation out of town. So it wasn't really anybody's fault that this child fell through the cracks, but we find so often that children do. And sometimes it's a cultural lack of understanding as to how to work the system. Sometimes there's a language barrier involved. Sometimes people don't have a system of care that they can plug into, and that's one of the things that we try to do at the screening is if we identify a family that doesn't have a primary care pediatrician or caregiver, that before they leave, we have given them information and attempted to hook them up with somebody so that their child will have all the preventive as well as the interventions that need to be done just from a regular medical perspective, just illnesses, sore throats and ear infections and things like that. But those are two sort of classic examples, I think, of some of the things that we do pick up in the screening in this developmental program.
Boy, and that brings to mind some of the, if you will, old wives' tales. Probably that is the wrong phrase to use nowadays. But the traditional misperceptions, let's put it that way, might be a little bit more elegant, perhaps, that can get in the way of those sorts of things. Because great-grandma said, well, you know, Uncle Bill there, he didn't start talking until he was 12.
They never shut up.
And then after that. So, you know, maybe it was not a good thing that he started talking at all. But does that get in the way? Do you think just some of those generational things that are passed down from mom to daughter and all that?
Oh gosh, I'm sure. Man, I have to think about that. Yeah, no doubt that kind of stuff gets in the way, and I think that's one of the important reasons that we just want to funnel people into this day to just eliminate any doubt whatsoever. And you know, if there is an issue, then immediately, that child doesn't leave without referrals for services. And if there's not, then great. At least mom knows that. Or, you know, then they can kind of continue with a little bit of an easier heart.
Yeah, I think that's one of the important things that we said in the beginning when we started this is it's really important that any parent coming in has that opportunity to see who the referral person would be that they would be going to, that they have that connection. And, you know, we talk about success stories, and we have many, many children that have gone on to be evaluated by the early steps and got into early steps program and had early intervention through early steps that came into their home or got them early daycare, or children over three that went into the school system, into the pre-K program. We're getting very good, successful outcomes as they come out. But even as small as I can remember, one time we had like six children that had severe dental decay.
I was thinking about that.
Six, mm-hmm. and they're under five, and you know we don't think about how important good dental health is to the health of a child, to their general outcomes, and we're able to write a grant and get those children the services they needed for their dental decay. And they didn't have dentists. Hadn't been to a dentist. The families got good education on what they needed to be doing to help, you know, prevent that for other children. But those children are, you know, they're doing well, and they got dental intervention. So it's, you know, there's the whole spectrum. And we've had children that Dr. C saw and said, yes, they need to go see their doctor for their blockage in their ears or, you know, some problems with vision. So it's been all of it.
Yeah. Why is it that we still treat dental care, even under some employer health plans, as an extra luxury add-on?
Yeah.
When so much chronic illness is now connected to the lack of good dental health, heart disease, and all kinds of things, Dr. C?
Yes, you're right. And I don't know why we have not accepted and elevated dental care to the level of regular medical care. But it is a missing piece, and that's one of the really strong pieces that we have in the developmental screening. We have a dentist who evaluates every single child and not only tells the parent whether there's an issue and what needs to be done about it, but educates them. These kids come out with toothbrushes, and they come out with little mirrors that they can, play with, but also that the parent can use to look and check the teeth and make sure that something isn't going awry. And encouragement about getting regular dental care, just from a pediatric perspective, we recommend as a routine that kids start evaluating or being evaluated by their dentist by the age of three, unless a problem has been determined earlier. So it should be put in place just like routine vision and hearing screening should be in place, and that's a part of the pediatric recommendations.
Yeah, and there's another pushback against the old wisdom, if you will, that you wait till the permanent teeth are in because who cares about the baby teeth anyway?
Mm-hmm. Right, but we know that's no longer true.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. To the phones we go, and by the way, 414-1234, the local number for Perspectives, 800-926-8809, long distance, and Reed joins us. Hey, Reed.
Hey, Tom.
How's it going?
Oh, pretty good. I'm starting to feel like your co-host. But, man, you keep having such great shows, I can't help but call in.
Well, heck, we're just going to have to bring you on deck here in a paid position here, Reed. That's all there is to it.
Well, you know, I'm available, Tom. my question for your panel, and I want to thank them for the great work they do. My question is, in light of this big vaccination scare that we had over the past few years, which of course has been debunked, and this British doctor has lost his license, but there are still many parents who feel like having their children vaccinated might end up causing them developmental disabilities. Does your panel face these questions when they're doing these screenings?
Oh, what do we call that, Reed? The Jenny McCarthy effect. Yes, I remember that. Yeah. let's go around and find out. Well, Dr. C, is that still a thing where people are saying, oh, no, these terrible vaccines are going to hurt my child?
I think there are still some people who are concerned with that, even though, as your caller said, it has been disproven to be any cause and effect. But there are people who are still reticent about vaccines, who feel like the child gets too many vaccines in too short a period of time. The evidence that we have to go on, and we always try to go back to the scientific evidence, but the evidence is that the recommended pediatric vaccination schedule is safe and effective and is what is recommended for each child. Now, Are there exceptions? Maybe. But that's a discussion that the parent and the pediatrician need to have to determine whether there needs to be any adjustment or not, and if it's for a reason that is a valid reason.
Okay. Yeah, Courtney, what are you hearing through whole child?
I think that usually these kinds of – this issue, it is still – you hear about it and it's out there. But usually if you can educate the parent, talk about the scientific evidence, and talk about the potential for some of these terrible diseases and viruses and things, that you can bring them around. But it does require an education, talking to their physician, and getting the information out there.
Okay. And Katie, does that question come up during screenings where parents ask about that? Or?
I don't think we've really had that question. I mean, I think more our concern has been, as Dr. C had said, is making sure families have a caregiver, a family practitioner for their family, and that we make sure they have some medical community to be hooked to. But I haven't really heard the question.
Well, which means that perhaps is losing a little bit of popular traction as far as, it has been debunked just so aggressively by at least legitimate media outlets and that sort of thing. Maybe that is no longer a thing, which is good, Reed, and thank you for bringing that up. I'm wondering, though, about parents who maybe are a little bit maybe too attuned to what's going on and are almost dysfunctional as to, oh my gosh, every time some little thing happens, they overreact and they're dragging the child to the ER or to the pediatrician, Dr. C, or whatever. Just, my child, there's something wrong. The kid's broken. Fix it. Do you get much of that? And how do you deal with that on a basis of reassuring the parents that, yes, it's good to be a very perceptive and watchful and all, but let's not go nuts over this whole thing.
Well, I think it's as you said, as you see that developing in a parent based on interventions that you may have with them over time, I think you can be reassuring. You can give them information that will help them to sort of settle down and realize that there's a spectrum of development that is within which is everything is considered normal. And if their child falls within that time frame and in that spectrum, probably everything is going according to plan. It may be a little different from the sibling or the child next door, but as long as it's within those boundaries, it's considered to be appropriate. It's when they fall outside of those boundaries that we have concerns. And sometimes it is difficult to sort of separate that out, particularly if they're on the cusp. But seeing them over time is what gives clarification to the picture.
Okay, and that throws it over to behavioral and mental health issues. Mm-hmm. And Sarah McElhaney, at the university level, how do you deal with that as a resource that you guys offer?
Oh, my goodness. Well, what we can provide is we provide the screening. We have like a validated, reliable screening tool. Granted that a screening for depression does not necessarily mean a diagnosis for depression. There's all kinds of stuff that can filter into that. But what we do have is we have that screening, and then we take that screening and we give it to the counselors with 2-on-1, and then they have the opportunity to actually discuss it. I call it like it's an onion. You kind of peel back the layers and you talk about what are all the things that are coming together into this. So then it does. It becomes a referral to a clinician who can have that long-term relationship with the family and kind of help them work through whatever may be the issue.
Well, given the fact that now here in the Capital Region, some 20% of the economy is dedicated to healthcare services, at the clinical level, at the hospital level, private practitioners, all that, we have probably about as dense an assortment of resources available as you're going to find, I think, anywhere in the country right now. Courtney, what do you think?
I was just came to mind FSU College of Medicine, Dr. Heather Flynn and some of her, Sarah, they did an amazing job putting together a resource guide for mental health services, you know, depending on what insurance you have or not don't have. And that has been a real gift to our community. So now other providers can look at that, individuals can look at that and figure out where they can get services that they need. And I think that that depression screen, I know that I think at the last screening we had a parent that maybe there was a bit of a red flag on the screen that came in, and it after talking to 211 and peeling back that onion, I think we found out they were virtually homeless or and it was more of a situational kind of maybe depression. And but it's really just a wonderful thing that we've been able to add this to the screening, because the caregiver of the child and their mental health and their well-being is critical to the health of the child.
Yeah, and not to forget that all of this is at the screening level here without charge.
Without charge.
I mean, you're dealing – if you had to put a price tag on this, has anyone sat down – Katie, did you ever say, boy, if you were to go to the commercial healthcare market and to get all these diagnostic tools together in one place – what would this cost?
I think thousands of dollars. It really would. And I think the critical thing for is really this spotlights what's going on every day in our community. All of these agencies come together and offer this as a team. But services for children and screening and evaluation, if there is a concern, it is free. And we need to make sure families understand that. Many times after the screening date, a family will call Fiddlers and say, oh, I missed it. Now what do we do? Well, Child Find goes on every day. Developmental piece. But there's also the opportunity to have the dentist there, and all those things are real important. But, yeah, if you were to do this privately, it would be thousands of dollars.
And to that note, Tom, there are other counties and communities that put on these types of screening. Hillsborough County is for one. And our team traveled to Hillsborough years ago to really see best practice and get a sense of how we might do this here, that have hundreds of thousands of dollar budget to do this.
Yeah.
And I will say that we operate this screening on a couple hundred dollars feeding the volunteers.
We're talking labor of love here, Courtney.
I just think what we could do with a little funding, we could offer it. You know, my vision would be see it done in community centers and going into neighborhoods where maybe people can't get to our screening.
Yeah.
We'll talk more in just a moment right here on Perspectives. Developmental screening that is straight ahead is a week from tomorrow. That is April 8th at the CMS, Children's Medical Services, out the corner of Phillips and Miccosukee here in Tallahassee, in our all-star panel of Courtney Atkins, Katie McCray, Dr. Mary Beth C., and Sarah McElhaney here with us to talk about it on Perspectives. And for the benefit of folks just joining us again, how does it work? I get an appointment, which is required. You got to call the 561-6545 or 561-6553. Did I get that right?
I think you got that right.
Okay. To make the appointment, and there is a maximum number of participants, so the earlier, the better as far as that concerned. And I get my appointment, and I bring my child between those appointed hours of 8:30 and 11:30. And what happens?
Well, I think what happens is that we depend so much on our community volunteers. We have FAMU students, we have FSU students, and we have retired teachers, and plus our agency volunteers. CMS provides a lot of volunteers, but a family comes and they come to the registration desk and they're assigned a family facilitator, which is a real unique piece of this event, because this family facilitator, who's a volunteer that's been trained, will take the family through the screen. So they stay with the family. They help them fill out the paperwork, because, you know, we are agencies. We always have to have some paperwork. And they will stay with the family as they go to the dentist for screening, as they get a nutrition kind of advice, as they get their vision screened and their hearing screened. These are all different stations in CMS, which is why CMS is such a great place to have it. They go to a developmental screen. They have a behavioral screen. They have a speech and language, and our speech and language students and speech and language department from FSU is there with their students. And then they also have the caregiver screen that 2-on-1 helps us with. So they all of those time they take time. Questions come up. The screener interacts with the family, and then the family facilitator is there to kind of help guide them through that system. And at the end, they get to the checkout station where someone reviews and makes sure they've gone to all the stations. And then there's a resource room there with all the agencies that provide services for young children. And they're directed into the resource room. If there's a referral, a reason for a referral, they go right to that agency and they get an opportunity for a follow-up appointment to have an evaluation. Remember, this is just a screen. But so it's all there, and I think we couldn't do it without our volunteers. I mean, like Courtney said, we have hundreds of volunteers, and they're there. The family facilitator is taking them through, all the volunteers that are doing this actual screening of the children and the families, and then the agency providers that are there providing services.
Reminds me a little bit of what happened when I had my taxes done last night out at AARP. You know, everything, you know, is you go through the process, and then it gets reviewed, and then they say, okay, you can go.
Yeah.
But if in case something comes up, there is a red flag somewhere along the way, then you said that there are resources available there to help. Well, maybe Dr. C, talk a little bit about that. How does that work?
Well, as Katie said, the resource room is full of representatives of all the different agencies that provide services to young children. And so when that child has a red flag, then the family facilitator will take that person, the parent, to the resource area that can provide the services for that particular child. And, Tom, I wanted to say one other thing, too. From a pediatric point of view, one of the common things that pediatricians hear from families is about young children's behavior. And I think that when we realize that behavior is really the language of young children, and we try to dissect what that behavior means, if there is a developmental issue going on and that child is frustrated because we as a society or adults or parents are asking them to do things that they developmentally don't have the skills to do, then they get frustrated, and then that usually plays out in some sort of behavior. And that impacts not only the child and the parent, but the entire family system. So if we see a child who whose parent is complaining about behavioral issues, I think that is another little indicator that we better look developmentally at that child and see if that child is struggling in a way that perhaps we had not previously recognized, so that we can get in there and we don't want to just change the behavior. We want to get to the root of the behavior and make the change so that the behavior will naturally change.
Okay, but it can also be a family dynamic thing that can be contributing to all this as well, and not necessarily a physiological or a developmental problem, right?
True. And the child can never be looked at in a vacuum. They are an individual residing within a family structure, residing within a community structure. And so if there's something going wrong in those areas, their behavior may very well be affected by that as well. So we don't look at a child in isolation anymore. We look at them in context.
And many times we have children that come through that are in the foster care system, and perhaps the parent or the caregiver is new to this child. And so we can, it's wonderful mm-hmm. that they have an opportunity to be screened. And on the kind of piggybacking on what Dr. C said, I think sometimes there are parents that just don't understand the developmental how children develop in those developmental stages and will have expectations of a child that just don't make any sense. And so we can provide that education at the screening too, so they can understand this isn't something they should be able to do yet. You know?
And I think that's the advantage to actually bringing your child to our event, is that you have all of these professionals in one place, so that they're seeing the child, and then you can have kind of all of the people together to look at it in context. And then additionally, you don't if something is identified as an issue that needs to be addressed, you don't leave without an appointment. I mean, you know, we don't send people away and say, this is something you should get taken care of. We funnel them into the resource room where they meet with someone from an agency and they make that connection. And then again, it's in context. The people know who they are and they feel like they have a connection already with this agency.
Well, this holistic approach, which I think the contemporary healthcare system is struggling to put together, is available right here. What a great template for the way that really most of us should get our health care, where we have all of these resources available. It's not just we're looking at the hangnail. We're looking at, you know, what precipitated it and what environmental conditions may have contributed to its severity or whatever the thing is. This is wonderful.
Tom, I think we also ought to mention that with the parent's permission, the results of the screening findings are sent to the primary care physician, pediatrician, family practitioner, whoever they may be, so that they're now brought into the loop that the child did attend the screening, that these were the things that were screened for, these were possible red flags, these were the hookups that were made with the agencies, so that they can better follow through and check on how things are going when they see the child for routine health care visits.
Well, is there any help in even identifying a primary care doctor in the case of families that don't have them? Is that available?
Absolutely.
To?
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's high on our list. We think every child needs a primary care physician.
Right. So if they – many times the children that come through don't have health insurance. And so right there at the screening, we can connect them with Medicaid or Kid Care and the medical home.
Okay. Let's take it from a minute. And without getting into the politics, I know we all mm-hmm. be – this is Tallahassee. You got to have that as part of the backstory on this whole thing. But has anyone, any of the higher policy makers kind of looked at this and just said, well, it worked in Hillsborough County. It's working great in Leon County. What a wonderful way to maybe start working this into a statewide kind of thing.
Well, we've had the mayor.
Well, in 2012, mm-hmm. we were asked by the Children's Cabinet to come and present on the screening, and we talked about that, and they seemed really thrilled and impressed with it. We did yeah. a lot more, but yeah, at the last screening, our mayor and first lady came mm-hmm. with their 18-month-old twins, and that was certainly wonderful of them to do to help highlight the screening to other families in the community. We're blessed to have a mayor that is really taking young children and quality early education on as his mission. But yeah, we've had other county
Senator
from Mumford, but we've mm-hmm. also had other representatives from other Florida counties come in and look to our screening as best practice and how can we do this here. So it's been wonderful that we've been able to share.
And we have had a few. I know they haven't done it as big, but Chipley has replicated what we've done. And so, you know, it's all about trying to – but once again, it's difficult to, you know, to have the resources in our smaller communities that we have. And we're very lucky that we have those.
Right. And we've helped Jefferson County.
Jefferson, we've done a screen. And Taylor County, mm-hmm. we've done. And those – and. People living in those counties are welcome to come to this screen as well.
So. That was a good point because mm-hmm. I didn't know if there was any geographical restriction on participation in this one.
Well, we have the agreement was the CMS catchment area that we would provide services, and the Fiddler's Child Find serves Jefferson, Taylor, Wakulla, Leon, and Gadsden counties. So all of those counties are welcome, and the counties beyond that the CMS does sometimes serve, we try to look individually at the child and see if possibly we can hook them up with a screen closer to their home. So, but we, you know, we have screened some children from I think we had Madison come a couple. And we were willing to do it, and we just, you know, just tried to make sure we got them hooked up to their child finds special.
Yeah, because so much, as you know, has been mm-hmm. said about the some of the problems and deficiencies within rural counties when it comes to availability mm-hmm. Of special health care services and that kind of thing, too. That again, this template just fascinates me. And it sounds like it works.
It does work.
Mm-hmm. And even if the screening gets full and we can't see take any more appointments, when the family calls, there's still opportunity for information, making an appointment for a future screen. So it's really, we encourage everyone to call, even if it's, you know, Thursday afternoon, April 7th, and they are sure that the screening's full, we can still get important information to them and get them right. An appointment for a future screening.
Okay, let's repeat again for the benefit of those joining us within the past 15 minutes or so, what we're talking about, which is the developmental screening, which is taking place at Children's Medical Services, CMS for short, at Miccosukee and Phillips Road a week from tomorrow, which is April 8th, and the appointments, which are required, will take place between 8:30 and 11:30, and we got those numbers again, Katie, if you would please. Wait a second. While you're looking, I got them here. 561-6545. That's 561-6545.
Or 561-6553.
6553. Okay. And that, again, you got to make an appointment there, but it's a lot of excitement. I caught the last one you were talking about, Courtney, with Mayor Gillum and RJ and the twins. I even think the twins may have smiled a little bit during that.
They did, and it was Halloween, I believe. They had been at their preschool Halloween. They were adorable. And Mickey and Minnie Mouse.
Yes.
These little mice running around. There we go. We only have a few minutes left here for everyone to, again, just open forum, anything you want to say. Dr. C, anything that you want to say here in the few minutes we have remaining? Here.
The only thing I'd like to add is that the importance of screening and finding developmental issues early is so, so critical to that child's overall and long-term development. We know from studies that have been done that the earlier an issue gets addressed, the better the long-term outcome is. And that's not in question. So even kids with minor things that can be addressed early, the issue may totally be taken care of and would not be recognizable later on. Kids with things that are going to be more lifelong things, such as children on the autism spectrum, the outcomes are far, far better if we can get services to those children in the young ages. So that's just a real critical issue. The earlier, the better.
Okay, and this is a great opportunity to get that kind of early intervention, or conversely, to get that wonderful, everything's fine, don't worry about mm-hmm. it, which is what a lot of parents really need to hear. Sarah McElhaney.
I would say that it's just really exciting to be a part of so many people that are willing to come together and be this committed to seeing healthy families in our community. And one of the other things that we didn't mention earlier is that 2-1-1 Big Bend, actually one of the pieces that they bring is that they follow up on everybody, and they call them and they check in and they see, how'd your appointment go? Did you make your appointment? Do we need to make another one? And I just think that this idea of this really holistic care, and we're kind of going above and beyond. We're making it so that it's easy for families, and I just really appreciate that. I think that's a really valuable service.
Yeah, it redefines that whole phrase, continuum of care, mm-hmm. you know? It truly does. Katie McKay.
I think the real exciting piece is, and it is about the children we're seeing, is also the continuity that happens because we're in a university town and we have so many university students that are volunteering. We have nursing students and docs, students that are starting to be doctors and speech-language pathologists, and they're all seeing the benefit of early intervention. And we're, you know, it's kind of like a on-the-job training for all of them, and hopefully that continues and it kind of continues out, and we have true advocates for early identification for young children out there now as practitioners. So
that's like advanced coursework for those guys.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
And finally, Courtney Atkins.
Well, I think a little bit piggybacking on what Katie said, the fact that there is screening going on every day at least Monday through Fridays throughout our community. And this is twice yearly, but it besides just screening these 100 children a year or more, is that we're able to get the information out to families through. Thank you to you for this show, but to get the information out to the broader community, how important this is and why it's important, and just to show what we together as a community, when we really come together, volunteering our time, can make happen.
We keep forgetting that healthy kids means a greater likelihood of healthy grown-ups and healthy families and healthy societies and all these things that come out from it. It all starts with the kids.
That's right.
That's right.
Yeah, this is our future workforce.
Yeah.
Yep.
Folks, it has been an absolutely wonderful discussion. Thank you so much for coming on again. The developmental screen, free April 8th, 8:30 to 11:30. Appointments, 561-6545 or 561-6553. Courtney Atkins, Katie McRae, Dr. Mary Beth C., and Sarah McElhaney, thank you all for coming on Perspectives today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Perspectives produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Technical assistance courtesy of Taylor Cox with Lydell Rawls on the phones and email device. And I'm Tom Flanagan. Next week, we'll delve into the ever-fascinating world of local government taxes and spending and a group that's seeking more accountability from elected officials and more participation from taxpayers. That's coming up next week right here on Perspectives.
Copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.